ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Tuesday on the back of a superb round of footy. 8 games spread across 5 days for the Easter weekend. You only have to wait a couple of sleeps and the footy's back again as the whole competition makes its way to Adelaide for Gather Round. Corbin Middlemass alongside former All-Australian, All-Australian captain, favourite son of the West, Bob Murphy.
Hello, Corbin. How are you, mate?
What a weekend of footy.
Oh, my gosh. What a glorious weekend of footy. Capped off by Easter Monday.
Good was good.
Yeah.
Bad was bad.
The basement is higher, I think.
Okay.
I feel like most games are pretty entertaining.
I think we sort of spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. I feel like the blowouts have increased slightly,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like the good's better than it has been in the past, and I'm willing to make that sacrifice.
Yeah, I also feel like whilst there is blowouts, on the footy that I've watched, the teams that are maybe on the wrong side of it are still playing to win.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? They start with the intent of, our best might be good enough to win, so let's push for that attacking our best style and see what happens, which I think the game lost that for a fair while.
And that's what we want to set, isn't it?
Totally. I actually think if you're a developing side, that's where you actually get some goodness in the experience. You're flooding numbers back and playing to not lose by more than 10 goals. Yeah. I don't know if that helps a young list.
Mm. It was a big night of footy shows last night, particularly because the game ended and then yes. It bumps into all your footy analysis. So,
do you think it has a flow-on effect that the blood is still boiling in a good way of the intensity and the emotion of the football rolls straight into a broadcast?
I do.
Liniment smell is still in the nostrils?
I do chuckle a little bit with the magazine-style programs that basically have their set agenda or whatever. Yeah. So you can imagine usually on Monday they get all day to pour over it. Mm-hmm. Then when the game comes in, obviously the most recent is always the most interesting. Mm-hmm. And so then it's trying to get the balance between how much do we cover off on this game and feel like we're just doing a post-game coverage much do we move on to the rest of the agenda. And so
perfect storm too with the Cats and the Hawks.
What a game of footy. So undoubtedly we picked out a few of these elements. Fox Footy had access to both the coaches. So Sam Mitchell into Chris Scott, or the other way around, last night on AFL 360. So understandably they pulled apart what was a tremendous edition of the Easter Monday blockbuster. Just the fourth time the Hawks have won it. They did lose two of their, or seemingly were about to lose two of their senior players on the run. Jack Gunston looked for all money like he'd done his hamstring.
Unbelievable.
And then James Sicily went off, had his shoulder strapped when he was off the ground. Geelong opened up a game-high lead of 13 points. He came back and ended up taking what turned out to be a pretty telling mark in the waning moments. And Sam Mitchell spoke about that on AFL 360.
Building resilience is one of the really important parts of the game. And when you've got young players who, they need to develop in their game, that they need to play. It's very rare that you get to mid-season and you're feeling 100%. So you need to be able to play with these injuries. And when you've got two of your leaders standing up and winning us a game of footy, really, it's pretty easy to point the finger at those guys and say, that's how we do it.
What a great coaching exercise. To basically say, hey, look what James Sicily and Jack Gunston did today. That's what we need more of.
That's the classic truism of football, no matter what level you're playing at. You think you're hurting? You want to dig in? Have a look at this bloke. His arm's falling off. It was great. I mean, yep. I would genuinely love to know what the specific injuries were, because the James Sicily one, when I looked at the incident, I thought, oh, that doesn't look like a shoulder. That looks like a rib, like a knee. Anyway, it looked like it hurt a lot.
Yep.
I sort of was wincing.
So you didn't necessarily think shoulder.
When I looked at the contact, I was like, I'm not sure. That was not my first thought. And the Jack Gunston one, Corbin, I've done a lot of hamstrings. That looked, for all intents and purposes, like a genuine, like significant hamstring. It clearly wasn't. It was some sort of neural sort of issue that we've seen a bit of already this year. And it proved prophetic to get him back out there, because he ends up, Barry Breen style, kicks the winning point.
It was a fun game of footy, wasn't it?
It's the greatest rivalry in our game, and it's not even close, I think. And the teams They look like opposite. The colours just work. It's very Celtics Lakers.
There is something in that.
The Easter Monday, it just is like pages of a book. Okay, well, we can just get the next page. There's a magnetic pull for it to be close at the end. It was a privilege to watch.
I said the same thing yesterday when we were lucky enough to broadcast the game, that you look out and there's 85,000 people at the MCG, cloudy, rainy morning, cloud clears, sun beating down, 85,000 in the house, two iconic sets of jumpers, two good teams. It was good on good yesterday.
Yeah, it did look like the AI version of what's AFL heaven look like at this time of year. That's what it spat out.
So 13 points was the biggest margin either way. That was when Geelong led on the back of that Blitzarf's goal in the last quarter. Then he goes from hero to villain, puts two out of bounds on the full.
Yeah.
Mabior Chole had two chances to really win the game, missed them both after kicking a goal before that. And then we had the key forwards, Bob Up, Shannon, Neil, who marks and goals, and then Mitch Lewis does the same at the other end, and ultimately it's we talk about Jack Gunston like he's 84 years old, but the incredible career. I saw Poppy Penny put a brilliant tweet out yesterday, actually, which got me thinking. She said, "Is Jack Gunston the greatest one club player that's played for three clubs?"
Oh, that's a great tweet. You know what? I genuinely, just listening to that, I forgot about Adelaide.
Yeah.
I genuinely forgot about Adelaide because I'm not as clever and I'm not as funny as Poppy. But when I was watching it yesterday and he was dancing around and doing his thing, I was like, oh, remember when he had that little sojourn to Brisbane and then his back was shot?
Yep.
And he was well into his 30s then. Like, he was done.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, Jack Gunston, what a great career, but he's completely finished. Oh, the Hawks have got him back. Oh, a bit of a mentoring, probably into coaching. I understand that.
Yeah.
And now there's talk of,
100 goals in a year.
Is he the best key forward in the game? It's quite a stunning, quite a stunning career.
Chris Cott said afterwards that he felt like it wasn't a Geelong kind of game. He said they didn't play their best footy. He said sometimes you're on the wrong side of those results and you feel a little bit hard done by that you did so much right and ultimately didn't win. He said he didn't really feel like that kind of game. And I believe him. And I actually think that that's a credit to his side, that they didn't play that well, and yet they took another really good team the distance, and they were in front by 6 points with, 50 seconds to go?
Yeah, look, I think there's so many different ways you could look at it. I think if I was a Geelong supporter, and I'm clearly not, when they're an old team that's done so much, and the coach has been there a long time, you wonder, is the hunger and appetite still there? Yes.
Yep.
It so is. And, of course, the rivalry does a bit of that, but it was a classic. I mean, it's trite to say that footy was the winner. Maybe that's just because we want to take it a bit off Hawthorn, but it really was. It was spectacular.
Yep. They've only ever played one draw against each other, which was back in 1963, and so I had the history books out yesterday.
Right. Wow.
For all their epic battles
for
and
all,
everything else.
It always tips one way or the other.
And so,
When that ball hit the post,
and
then it came back in and they played on straight away. Now, I understand that that's not actually what should happen. They have to signal and then it did become like a combination of local footy and the World Wrestling Federation for you know when the noise is so loud that the camera wobbles?
Yeah.
I live for those moments. I think, wow, it's proper now. It is chaos out there right now where the game is going on and the noise and hysteria. Wonderful.
Awesome day at the MCG. Now, you can take this with an absolute grain of salt. I do some work with Fox Footy, so it's easy for me to say.
I used to as well.
But you be the judge. I thought it was an excellent night on Fox Footy because you had both the coaches on the couch. When Nathan Buckley, and I can say this as someone who does get a little grumpy at different times, he's coming straight from the coach's box, having been an assistant coach to Chris Scott during the day. Team's on the wrong side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And even Bucks admitted yesterday that he's in a contrarian kind of mood when he sat on the couch. And it felt like Jack Riewoldt and Jordan Lewis were just throwing a few theories at him. And Bucks wasn't necessarily biting on everything, particularly when it came to the conversation around Jeremy Cameron, who's kicked 4 goals, 8 to start the season. He had 38% of his disposals yesterday in the back half. And this is when Tom Hawkins and Jack Riewoldt just tried to engage a little bit with Nathan Buckley on how the out-of-form key forward at the Cats is going.
regardless if I've played with him or not, watching the player that he is, at his very best, where would you not want to, as an opposition, have Jeremy Cameron? And I just think that's inside 60 where he can hit the scoreboard.
Is there a directive from Scotty that needs to come out, or is it let Jeremy play and come up with himself?
Well, Jeremy's no different than any other player. They play the roles that they're asked to play. So at any given time.
It seems like he's got a bit more of a licence to roam, though.
Oh, I think some players, experienced players in particular, and especially your guns.
Yeah, well, if you saw Shannon Neal at back pocket.
Yeah, well,
I know they're different players.
Shannon wasn't put in a role up the ground, but Jeremy was. So
but do you agree with what we're saying with him? Like, he's clearly not at his best, and he's been hampered by his hand injury.
Yeah.
And there were moments where it did look like... And he's been great at that role previously, but it did look like he was in positions of where he wasn't as clearly as dangerous in D50.
OK. Well, he had 38% of his possessions behind centre.
Yep.
And he was asked to play a role at different times up the field, and he did that to the best of his ability.
How good's that?
I don't know if you have the ability to play the yeah again, but that was the voice of senior coach, former superstar Nathan Buckley. That's not media personality. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great TV. And the idea of the show is that everyone kicks around a few theories, and it's, you know, big opinions on the game and everything else. And you can imagine, you talk about, you know, the juices still flowing from the day's footy. Bucks has come straight out of it. He's probably got to go home and code the game and sit down as the role of assistant coaches. And on his way back home, he stops in and does his media commitment, and he's got these other, you know, former footballers who are running their theories by him. And you can just tell that he's not necessarily in the mood for that, Bucks, which made for great TV.
Oh, it makes for great TV because the imagination wanders. I find myself thinking, did Jeremy Cameron drift back a bit too much for Nathan's liking, and he's actually, that's what you...
Yeah.
And now I've been barking at you all day. Now I have to go and defend you to these blokes on TV. That's probably not what happened at all, but entertaining nonetheless. On that conversation, though, both can be right. Both can actually be right of, yes, if you want Jeremy Cameron in his most dangerous, clearly inside 60, but there is something of these players like Buddy, like Matthew Richardson, that had that ability to get up the ground. Charlie Curnow's another one. That just to get the juices flowing and to take their opponent into deep water, to run them up and high and then back, that is a part of their game. Now, it can tip over a little bit, but... So I think over the journey he's gotten it right.
I'm sure they'd love him to have most of his disposals inside the attacking
50. But he's not Tony Lockett.
And if you get to halftime and he hasn't touched the ball, why wouldn't you move him up the ground?
Why wouldn't you get him up and get him involved? You know, I did love the bit of like, well, he's got a specific role and he's asked to fill it. And then in the next breath it was, well, you know, older players and stars of the competition, they get to, you know. It is different.
It was a good challenge too from Jordan, wasn't it? Oh, we don't say Shannon Neal running up there. It's like, well, that's fair. that was one of many. It was they had a few little disagreements throughout the show, which made for interesting TV. All right, so it is a Tuesday after a round of footy, the day after the round's been completed. It's early in the season, which means there's a bit on the rundown that's been reserved for Carlton, which feels like it always happens. In the
Carlton Chronicles.
In the young season. Back to AFL 360 and Jared Waitley, who generally sees these things pretty well about the conversation, particularly surrounding the senior coach, Michael Voss.
The distasteful aspect to it is, in some of what I've read and listened to, there seems to be a disappointment that the club hasn't hurried up and sacked him. This is what makes AFL distinct. We should culturally value this, is we don't march coaches to the gallows after 4 weeks. We don't have sackings in April. So I think we should take a step back and be a bit more careful about it. They've spent a long time setting this season up. It is no good going into caretaker mode with 18 games to go. I think it would be reprehensible to do it. And nor should they be. I think Carlton's administrative mistake at the moment is they're indulging in a way they're accidentally fueling the narrative. You have the president and the chief executive come out after you've seen two games and you know they're not very good, saying, we're in it to make the 10, we'll win more than we lose. Nonsense. And then you've got the GM of footy answering questions, would you guarantee that he'll coach this week? I mean, come on. Don't indulge that. Don't fuel it.
No.
Because it's bad enough as it is. Vossie said the other day, I'm not giving three-day updates. Well, the rest of the damn club is. Stop it already. Back your guy, give him a suitable amount of time, and then make your judgments when that time comes.
It was the same old story on field. What'd you make of all that?
It's hard not to argue with what Jared put forward there. Look, the context of how I watched the game was away with the family at Easter, a bunch of cousins. Like, it was a crowded lounge room. And I've cards on the table. We were kind of barracking for North because just we wanted some drama. Yep. That's how we were watching the football. And then when it started to happen, I mean, there was hysteria in this lounge room that I was in. No one barracked for North Melbourne. No one barracked for Carlton. And as soon as it did tip over and North got in front, and then the cameras just kept going to Michael Voss, the noise just dropped in the household. And I wonder if how other people felt about this too. And it was like, oh, yeah, this is I'm not comfortable with this. Mm. You know,
You wanted it to happen until it happened.
Totally.
And then you're like, oh,
totally. And that's the hypocrisy of a lot of us in sport, when you watch from afar and you want the drama and you know, you're almost bloodthirsty and then you see the human element of it and you go, oh, no, that's too far. Let's pull it back a little bit.
But we were talking about the fight game in boxing before we came on to record this, and it's the same in boxing, isn't it? Where you think, oh, I want to see a thunderous knockout, and then you say knockout, and think, I don't really want to see that.
Yeah, you actually see the toll of it. But just purely on the field, it's the same. It's the same problem.
Who's ultimately accountable for that?
Oh, the coach.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a lot of shared responsibility, but it's a I've been banging on about this for a while, but it's
you've been strong on it.
Look, they won't ever tell us, but what happens when a side kicks two in a row? That's my basic philosophy, and when I worked in footy, that was one of the things. And look, the best team I ever played in, because I knew we'd talk about it this week, and I thought, instead of just saying the same thing over and over, what's a tangible example I can give you? So a team will call it a reset. They may have a different name for it, but it's essentially the mental game, and you have to train it. The best team I ever played in was we had help from a psychologist and the coach, and it was three things. It was when things turn against you, first, make yourself big and breathe. So literally make your body big and breathe so you get oxygen to your brain so you can actually think clearly.
So it was a physical thing
thing, because when you're under threat, you'll shrink.
Yeah.
So when you make yourself big and breathe so you can actually get some clear thinking to your brain and not just survival mode. Then it was touch or connect with someone. So literally touch a teammate or talk or both.
So that's the togetherness piece. That's a real modern phrase too, isn't it? The peace.
We're in this to get, I'm with you, we're okay.
Mm.
And then the next part was both a verbal and metaphorical, keep coming forward. Keep coming forward. So that's...
Yep.
That can be, as a defender, I got to keep coming, or it can, play in front, or whatever it is. But it actually is don't play on your heels. Wait to die.
The psychology is retreat. And,
retreat. Yourself small, survive. Yeah. So it was make yourself big and breathe, touch, connect, keep coming forward.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
And once you train that,
the
better you got at it. So when you do grab a teammate and say, keep coming forward, that's right. The noise and the hysteria and the scoreboard and our opponent, that all disappears.
So what
all quietens down, and then there's 23 of us and we are all thinking the same thing. I'm not alone. We'll be okay.
I know I'm going down the side street here, but what does training for that look like? Is that on the field at Witten Oval on a practice day? Is it behind closed doors? Is it in a theatre room?
It's meetings. Yep. It's a separate meeting from the planning of the week. Like, it would be a mindfulness or a psych session with the whole group or in line groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a reflection of each week. Hey, when this happened, how did we go with our reset? How did we go with the reset?
Yeah. Wow. Did you notice other players doing it when you're out there?
Oh, I noticed the first time we did a session on it.
Yeah.
I was one of the older players and I was at the back of the room and I saw shoulders.
Yep.
You could see
like the literal weight off
the
shoulder.
The worst thing about footy is not losing.
Mm.
It's being lonely out there.
Yeah.
That is the worst feeling.
Yeah, that's a great insight. Still on Carlton, so I referenced this on Saturday, actually, about job security in the AFL. It is as good in AFL than it is in any professional sport anywhere around the world. So there's a really good article on the ABC website, which Cody Atkinson wrote, and I reference all the time. But in the EPL, basically the turnover of coaches from 2015 to 2019 was like 57% or something per season, which is ridiculous. The NBA was 1 in 4. The NRL was around 16%, same as Major League Baseball, and the AFL was down to 9%. So you could argue in AFL footy, we actually stick with our coaches sort of longer than any other code, and Jared sort of referenced that there as well, talking about that it is culturally part of our game to stick with the coach past seemingly the point where it's done. David King made the counterpoint the other day to basically, and he talks a lot about, you know, the long goodbye and how the long goodbye is good for no one. And once you basically get to the point where you go, look, he's not our guy, he's not going to be our guy, that maybe we're better off to respect your people. And sometimes the most respect you can give a senior coach once you've made that decision is actually to wave goodbye. I guess the only part is it's round four. Yeah. Like, it's so early.
It's so early. It's so early.
Yeah.
No, I'm probably more in the Jared camp on this one. And I think situations can be different. It doesn't seem like Carlton is, for want of a better term, it doesn't seem toxic in terms of the relationships don't seem, they might be strained and they, you know, I'm sure it's stressful, but it doesn't seem like it's gone down a poisonous sort of that sort of path. It just seems like they just can't get on the same page when the crunch comes. So I think my instinct would be that it's more of a situation of steady the ship, get to the middle of the year, and then and then the club and coach sort of sit down for a more significant conversation.
Let's go back to on the couch. This also on the Blues.
People can criticise St Kilda for letting go of Steele, but I actually commend them because they're trying to bring new, fresh faces in. They might not think that he is the one that can take them to the promised land. Now, time will tell. For me, I look at Carlton and you look at the youth coming through and the opportunity, and it's a balancing act. I've got no doubt about that. But I think we mentioned it at last year on what do you do with a player like Cripps? Is he going to be in your next premiership side? Do you think he's going to be in their next premiership side?
No, I'm not sold on him being in the next premiership side.
So he's a great player. His CV is up there with the greats of the game, I think. And I think he's still got a lot to offer. But you are employed by the club to make tough decisions, to rejuvenate this list and get them to a point where they are competitive. And I think there's a serious question on whether they can trade Cripps out and get draft picks back in and it be a win-win for both clubs. Now, it's a balance with leadership, I understand that. But in 5 years' time, and Cripps might be a one-club player but hasn't played in a grand final or premiership success, then what have you achieved with the club?
So the backstory to this was I was talking about Jack Steele and the fact that he was basically shoved out by St Kilda, goes to Melbourne, rejuvenates the player. Maybe it's the best thing for St Kilda where they can move on and do what they have to do. Is there any merit in that from a Carlton perspective?
Zero. Absolutely zero. What's the strongest I can disagree with the call of trading Paddy Cripps out?
Yeah.
There's other conversations around other players who have, you know, significant worth at Carlton. Cripps is not the one. I would even go, if Carlton traded Paddy Cripps out to get a couple of picks in or whatever, you put yourselves back 10 years plus. I actually think he's one of the few shining lights of the club having a strong identity.
Yep.
And whatever Paddy Cripps is doing now, he not everything has to be about are you in the next premiership side. I know it sounds great to say it, but it's actually not always about that. What's the line of society grows great when man plants, you know, trees that he'll never sit under. There's a bit of that for Paddy Cripps at Carlton. He is one of the greats of all time, and he probably won't play in a flag. But that doesn't mean that the next few years of his will be the greatest thing he's ever done in footy. So I just vehemently would be against that kind of decision. That's the kind of thinking I believe is that's the ESPN NFL Super Bowl influence into our game that does not translate. We're not franchises. So we're clubs.
You would argue the counterpoint is what if it's player driven? So does the player get the right to do it, but the club doesn't? Because last year we lived through it at the Bombers, and essentially Zach Merritt...
If Paddy Cripps says he wants out, then it's... And that's just beyond disaster. That's absolutely rip the heart out sort of stuff. There's other players, though. There's other players. Like, everyone wants a Harry Mackay, but Harry, like... Harry's not Paddy Cripps. He doesn't play with enough... He doesn't play with enough soul, Harry Mackay. He shrinks. He's one that gets small when the tide turns against them, and he's the biggest bloke out there.
There's some big picture stuff out of the weekend, which we love. That's what we're all about here on ABC AFL Daily on a Tuesday. Go back to Friday. So Jimmy Bartel was responding to the soundbite, which we had on Saturday, Alistair Clarkson talking about his relationship with Colby McKercher. And he said, look, Colby's a guy that he wants to be coached hard, and he wants his feedback straight between the eyes. And McKercher seemingly was happy with it when he was interviewed post-game as well. And Jimmy Bartel reacted to it on Footy Classified on Channel 9.
Well, if Colby McKercher's got no problem with it, I'm not sure why we've got any problem with it. And it goes back to, as I touched on with Joel Selwood, it's the trust has been built. And at different moments, you need the stick, as we're talking about, is where you figuratively and, you know, physically poking his ego. And it's like, come on, mate, switch on. We're past the 10-20 game barrier. We actually need you. We need you as a match winner. Last quarter, switch on. And I'm not sure why this has been a bit, you know, blown up into a big issue.
Is there a place for it, the physical stick or the physical push from the senior coach to the modern-day player?
I do. Like, I probably wouldn't be doing it if I was a coach, but that's not to say it's not the right thing to do. I'm more in the Jimmy camp here. I feel like it's overblown. If it was every 2 weeks you saw it, you'd be thinking, that's a strange pattern. But when it's once every so often... I didn't have a problem with it. I actually felt a bit like inspired by it, of just the level of care and investment in it. And I know some people will find that, oh, that's a strange sort of thing to say. Do you know the talk about hypocrisy and the absurdity of elite sport? You know, sometimes when a player is confronted like that and is really verbally challenged, it can also be an act of kindness from the coach, because sometimes, and I know this myself, when you're not going well and you know it, in your own head and your own thought cycle, it's getting worse and worse and worse. It's like a little storm churning inside. And when the coach comes up and barks his disappointment, and then, you know, in that case a little, you know, little tap to the ribs, it just makes it real. And then you go, okay, well, that's the full stop on it. Okay, now I know what I've got to answer that challenge. Yeah. And that's how I read it. I didn't see it as a power, an abuse of power or a violence to it. No, I saw it as almost like a there was almost a unorthodox kindness to it.
When we asked him about it on AFL Saturday, he spoke so... He went immediately straight to the educational piece, which sort of goes to show sort of how front of mind that was for him, where he immediately said, oh, look, a lot of these kids, you know, they're really talented juniors. The defensive side of their game is not the thing that's prioritised. That's something we really need to drum into these guys. And so basically it was straight away. He had a reason as to why he did it and what was going through his mind at the time. And Colby's one that wants to be coached hard. And so, you know, essentially I went to him. Yeah. And people would experience this in their own workplace where, you know, the ones that, where you get disappointed or you feel like you need to pass on the feedback or whatever, is, as you said, often comes from a place of care. You'd think, look, if there wasn't that same level of care or involvement.
Well, the buzz phrase and the buzz sentiment in elite sport all over the world is authenticity.
Yep.
You know, and I totally get that. That doesn't mean it's always things are good and positive reinforcement. It doesn't. It doesn't. Mm. But if you go up to a player and challenge him like that and then physically touch them in that way, sounds a bit, even just like a little rib flick or whatever it was, if there's no foundation of a relationship and that he doesn't know that the coach cares for him, then it's a problem. Yep. Then it's weird.
Yes.
You know, then it's like, where are we now? But if there's a lot of water in the well, then you can take the odd bucket out. And that's how I saw it. I did not for a second think, oh, that's a blight on the game. And and also, not everything has to be about kids watching, you know? Not everything does. Sometimes it's, you know, sheep stations on the field for these clubs.
Similar theme on this show. We've been talking about juices flowing out of the high-stakes Easter Monday clash. Well, Chris Scott, they caught him at the right moment on AFL 360, and it was a good time just to run a couple of big-picture ideas by him, particularly when he sort of let his thoughts known at one stage where he was commenting on the top 10 as it is now in the competition.
The wild card, yeah.
The wild card setup, and Jared Waitley picked up on what he was putting down.
The whatever we call the top 10, does that allude to the fact that you're not a big wild card guy?
I just think this is why I shouldn't do this so close to the game. I speak my mind, which is good you and bad for me generally. I mean, I tend to think they just made it up.
Made up the wild card.
Just threw in a couple more finals for no good reason except cash, probably.
What do you make of that?
If we had the lie detector out, it wouldn't have moved. He's telling the truth. Yeah.
Is that a big deal? So I know sort of Footy Classified picked up on it and said, I can't believe a senior coach would speak like that. And Sam was saying, I'll be interested to see how the AFL respond to it. I mean, that's just his thoughts on it.
I wouldn't have thought it's too... Like, you wouldn't get a rap over the knuckles for that, would you?
Chris sort of... He runs his own race a bit too, doesn't he? Like, he's spoken out openly in the past that doesn't believe in the injury list. Why do we have to disclose, you know, where everyone is? And on that front, the AFL have clearly said, we want the clubs to be more transparent on that. Chris has basically publicly said, hey, we're not going to follow it. And the AFL's done nothing about it. So I can't understand why they would intervene here on something like this, which is just his opinion on whether we should have 8 or 10 teams in the finals.
Well, he's one of the most experienced coaches. I think he's entitled to share his view. I think a lot of people within footy clubs are concerned that the wild card round pretty much eliminates a club's chance of going all the way. So I hope that's not the case, but to win 5, is that what it'd have to be? If you wild card, if you finish 10th, you'd have to win 5 in a row.
Yes, 5 in a row.
Yeah, 5 in a row, which a lot of people in clubs, even the more adventurous, optimistic type of people, seem to think that that's almost an impossibility. So that's a bit of the genesis as well.
Mm.
So I think most of us have had that idea that it's a bit of just a lever for the AFL to pull to have more finals, which is more revenue. Look, if a wild card team goes all the way, we're all fools, but I can understand his sentiment around it.
All right, last one, Gather Round, which is obviously coming up this week. This is what Sam McClure had to say about the Gather Round fixture.
Tonight we're going big on Gather Round and whether the AFL and the game itself is at risk, Brownie, of killing the golden goose. Now, the reason that we bring this up is, and we're about to get on a plane to Gather Round. Gather Round has been amazing for the competition and for the state of South Australia. But it is worth asking the question, I think. Is it enough to just put it on? Or do you have to make sure that all the games are as high quality as they can be? Because there is a sense from inside AFL House that it's okay if not every game is the best game it can be at Gather Round, because the great thing about Gather Round is simply that we're just all there. It doesn't help the people that don't get to get on the plane.
So the accusation in the past has been, hey, the games are soft in Gather Round. So they a lot of lopsided matchups because it's basically the event is the event. So why would we waste these blockbuster games in Gather Round?
Oh, sorry. Okay, I follow you. Yeah. So they're not getting the heavyweight sort of seedings versus each other?
Well, you're not going to get like Carlton Collingwood.
Versus each other. Sorry, I just had a moment there. I hang around with teenage kids that say versing all the time. Oh, my... I 2 week suspension for me.
So instead of like Carlton Collingwood, you're not going to get that. You're not going to get a showdown, for example. It's basically let's throw a few of the other matchups in. The interesting thing is, I actually think this is just about the best round of footy so far. So we get a full 9 games, which we've so rarely had. Adelaide Carlton's fascinating because the Crows are sort of just expected that they're going to bounce back, and yet I'm not sure that's a given. The Blues are clearly the team under pressure.
Yeah.
I think we suspect Adelaide will come back, but if they don't do it, all of a sudden the pressure's going to be on the Crows.
Yeah, I feel like most games are pretty fascinating at the moment. I don't align there so much with Sam's thoughts that it has to be these, you know, it has to be Geelong Hawthorn that we saw yesterday. We're on a bit of a cold streak with McClure on this show, I think. I've just got to put that out there, Sam McClure. We'll see how he goes next week. But it's a bit of a cold streak Corbin and Bob with Sam McClure at the moment.
I like that he's got a few sort of divergent opinions. Collingwood and Fremantle bumper game.
Yep.
Saturday Twilight, Swans Suns.
There you go. That's a ripper.
Hawks Bulldogs.
What's he on about, McClure?
I think it's a fun round. Port Adelaide St Kilda to finish.
So
he needs to have a lie down, Sam.
We'll see how we go.
Have a rest, Sammy.
Good hit out from you, Bob.
Likewise, Corbin.
I appreciate your insights as always. Enjoy the week, and I'll chat to you on the other side of Gather Round.
Make yourselves big, breathe, touch and connect, and keep coming forward.